opposed to trying to force the arch into it.
Right. I think some people go the other extreme where they're trying to force themselves.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. So we did a show yesterday about pregnancy and obese pregnant mothers and the effects on their fetus and possible antioxidant that can block the development of non-fatty liver disease. We're staying with pregnancy for a minute longer. First half hour of today's show, we're going to talk about why pregnant women should avoid licorice with Dr. Katri Raikkonen in just a moment. And then later in the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Peng Jiang, to talk about why the timing of a meal is as critical as what and how much you eat. And this is going to be a discussion on circadian rhythms, which we love to talk about on the show. So without further delay, let's get started. Welcome to the show, Dr. Katri Raikkonen. How are you?
Thank you very much. Thanks. I'm fine.
Okay, so let's start out really with the most important question that has really got me thinking. Why were you looking at licorice and pregnancy? Do pregnant women crave licorice? Do they eat a lot of licorice?
Well, in Finland, in fact, they do. So our study have shown that nearly 50% of pregnant women eat at least some licorice during pregnancy. So it is fairly common.
Wow, that's fascinating in and of itself. How was your study designed?
Well, my study is designed as an observational study. It's a longitudinal study that collected information on maternal licorice consumption while the mothers were still at the maternity ward after delivery. So we recruited healthy singleton babies who were born healthy in 1998 in one of the maternity hospitals in Finland. And in total, we recruited 1,049 women who then reported whether they had consumed licorice, sweet or salty, during pregnancy and how much during pregnancy.
Now, when we talk about licorice, when we talk about the candy licorice, we talk about the real black licorice and almost has an anise flavor. We're not talking about things that are called licorice, but actually have no real licorice root constituents in it, right?
Yes, we are talking about multiple products. So it's not only the black licorice that we are talking about. We are talking about, in Finland at the moment, of over 400 different food products. So it's soft candy, hard candy, chewing gum, ice creams, herbal teas, some cookies, some soft drinks, over-the-counter medication. Some people use this licorice root as a natural sweetener because I don't know if you knew, but this licorice root is very, very sweet. Almost 50 to 200 times sweeter than your regular table sugar. So it is added into many, many food products, apart from the black, red, yellow, sweet, and salty licorice.
And it's funny because in the United States, one of the main components that seems to be very interesting from licorice root is glycerothenic acid or glycyrrhizin, I guess they call it, or glycyrrhizin. And this has been used in dietary supplements because it seems to have some sort of beta-adrenergic effect, and it helps to mobilize fat into the bloodstream as free fatty acids so that the fat could be used up as a substrate during exercise. But what people don't realize about it is that it also can raise blood pressure dramatically and very, very rapidly. And it also has effects on the adrenal glands that are also not necessarily beneficial. I think it has an effect on aldosterone and sodium retention and some other things. So it is used here, but not the way it's used in Sweden, it sounds like. It's used here more so as a fat loss agent. But keep in mind that glycyrrhenic acid in and of itself is considered a drug in the United States. When you buy licorice, if you buy whole licorice root and process it yourself, it'll have glycyrrhenic acid in it. But if you buy licorice, bulk licorice powder from a supplier, it is the glycyrrhenic acid has been removed because glycyrrhizin is considered a drug here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But some studies that have been conducted in the USA have suggested that the daily consumption levels of an average individual can reach up to 200 milligrams per day. So it is widely used as additive in many food products.
Tea.
And people may not be aware that when they are consuming a food product, it really contains glycyrrhizin. Because if it doesn't exceed certain levels, the producer does not need to put this information in the product informative labels.
Interesting.
So even if you would try to very closely look at the product informative labels, you may not get this information.
So talk about the study. So you followed these subjects. These were women who were pregnant. They had filled out questionnaires indicating those that were using licorice-type products in their diet. Were you able to assess by their questionnaire how much licorice they were using in their diet on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, not on a day-to-day basis, but we were able to calculate the amounts per week because the Finnish Food Authority had prepared a list of all the food products that were available in Finland in grocery stores in 1993. So we were pretty aware of the products that were on sale at that time. But when we conducted this study in 1998, we updated this list by asking from manufacturers about their products that they were selling in grocery stores. So we knew exactly how much each product contained this glycyrrhizin. And based on the reported frequency of consumption of a certain product, we were able to calculate how much in milligrams per week the women consumed licorice or glycyrrhizin on average during their pregnancy.
So how many people fell into the category of using licorice during pregnancy? And I would imagine they were compared to some control group in this, right?
Yes. So the exact number in percentage out of these 1,049 women who participated in our study was 46.2%. So it's pretty common to consume licorice during pregnancy. And since you mentioned this blood pressure effect, it is fairly well known, or actually very well known, that licorice consumption has an influence on your blood pressure. So it elevates your blood pressure. And what maternity clinics in Finland do, they do advise women to consume licorice if they are suffering from low blood pressure. And that is not uncommon during pregnancy, that blood pressure really changes and shifts from day to day. And some women have a problem of suffering from low rather than high blood pressure. So they suggest that instead of using some medication, use this 100% pure natural product that then has an influence on increasing your blood pressure.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so when you started to track the children of the mothers who used licorice, how many children were they altogether, and over what period of time, how many years did you track them?
Well, we have followed these children up to the age of 8. And then the latest follow-up that was just recently published in American Journal of Epidemiology, the follow-up was conducted when the children entered puberty, which was on average 12.3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a long-term follow-up until puberty. So, of course, we suffer, this observational study of ours suffers from limitations, which one is sample attrition. So not all the children out of these 1,049 pregnancies participated in the follow-ups. So in the 8-year follow-up, we have 451 children participating, and in the 12-year follow-up, 378 children participate.
So what did you find when you looked at these children who were introduced to licorice in the womb?
Well, the latest follow-up really shows that the harmful effects on child intelligence quotient and behavior problems persist. So from childhood to adolescence. So at the age of 12.3 years, these children who were exposed to high levels of maternal bruciferidin during pregnancy scored up to 7 IQ points lower, and they had over 3 times higher risk of showing attention deficit hyperactivity disorder problems. And in girls, we also, in addition to these effects, found that the girls had a more advanced pubertal maturation.
Okay.
In boys, we didn't find this, but the reason is that still at the age of 12 years, boys lag behind girls in pubertal development, so there were very few boys who had entered puberty at this stage.
Okay, so now you're getting into an area that I have questions, okay? So licorice,
okay,
has been known to be a powerful phytoestrogen. And so introducing it in the womb, I would suspect, would do things that we would think that high estrogen levels during development would do. So the first question I have is, were there more girls than boys born to the mothers who were using licorice?
No, it didn't really influence the child's biological sex. So the distribution was even between girls and boys.
But interestingly,
this is not really the mechanism by which glycyrrhizin in the womb influences the unborn child.
No, and I get that, but I'm just, this was just an interesting observation of mine, that it's a powerful phytoestrogen, and we're starting to learn more and more about when phytoestrogens and or phytoandrogens are introduced in the womb, there are some potential changes that happen. But that is interesting that you said that the boys went into puberty later, correct?
Well, this is a global observation. So this didn't really, relate to our study findings. The only reason why I mentioned it was that we were not able to study pubertal development in relation to maternal glycyrrhizin consumption in this sample, because there was less variation between boys in the pubertal stage at this follow-up study. So there was greater variation among girls who enter globally puberty earlier than boys. So
okay,
we were able to study the effects on puberty in girls.
And so puberty occurred sooner in the girls than we would expect
sooner
from...
in girls, yes.
Okay, so there could be a phytoestrogen relationship there, but obviously more research would have to be done to elucidate that.
Yes, you're right.
So what dose are we seeing some of these brain changes, if you will, occurring that mothers are consuming on a day-to-day basis? And is there a safe threshold for consumption of licorice if women do want to eat licorice while pregnant?
Okay. So we compared two groups of children exposed to different levels of glycyrrhizin. So we defined the high exposure level group as those women who reported consuming over 500 milligrams per week glycyrrhizin in licorice products. And the zero to low exposure level group consumed none to very small amounts. So there is a clear difference between these groups in the exposure level. But this 500 milligrams per week can translate into even fairly low amounts of licorice or sweet or salty licorice in the candy products or other food products. So, for instance, in Finland, grocery stores sell 250 gram bags of soft licorice, black licorice. And that bag contains nearly 700 milligrams of glycyrrhizin. And hard candy, which is usually salty licorice, it can contain a very small box of these candies, can contain nearly 1,700 milligrams of licorice or glycyrrhizin. So it really depends on the product that you are consuming. But our study didn't observe any kind of like no observed adverse effect levels, because we reported that these associations were what we call dose response associations, which means that higher levels may be associated with more harm than lower levels. But any consumption level associates with more harm than not consuming at all.
Okay, I have a lot more questions. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I'll ask my questions on the other side. This is very intriguing to me. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym?
You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the
world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Katri Raikkonen. We're talking about the influence of eating licorice while you're pregnant on your baby. This is something that moms need to be very, very aware of. Okay, so are licorice products generally standardized for the amount of glycerothenic acid that is in there? Is there some way that a mom can look and say, oh, if I eat this entire box, I'm getting more than I need for the entire week?
Well, the food product informative labels should mention if the amount exceeds the allowable, or if the amounts exceed certain cutoffs. But there may be glycine rising if they do not exceed these cutoffs. But there are some allowable levels in foods for glycine rising content, and it is 16% for hard candy, and a little bit over 3% for soft candy. But for the other food products, the amounts are very, very small, varying from 1% to nearly 2%. So the main source actually is licorice for this glycine rising.
So does it matter if the mom just occasionally has it or if she uses it with consistency to these outcomes? Because you said it's a dose-dependent type of a thing where more may actually be worse. What if a mom just uses it a couple times, and even if the doses are high, higher than the 500 milligram a week threshold?
Yes, this is still a question that we are working on. So I have to say that we really do not know if there is a critical window of opportunity for licorice having an influence on the unborn child. So we do not really know that yet, but we are working on it on our ongoing research projects.
What's the pathway?
This is a very, very interesting question.
Yeah. What is the pathway that you think that it's affecting the child's brain? Because it's obviously, at this point in time, from your research, the brain effects are obvious. There could be other physiological effects that we don't know about. What do you think the pathway is?
Well, the pathway is very well known, and there is convincing evidence that comes from animal models, experimental animal models, where they have used different species, rodents, sheep, and monkeys. So this evidence demonstrates that the main key mechanism is placenta, and the key player is maternal cortisol. So under normal circumstances, the unborn child is protected from unnecessarily high levels of maternal circulating cortisol. And what glycyrrhizin in licorice does is that it breaks this protection in the placenta. And the placenta becomes more permeable to maternal cortisol. So it starts leaking maternal cortisol from the maternal circulation to the unborn child's side. And if the unborn child gets exposed to unnecessarily high levels of maternal cortisol. This then interferes and harms several neurodevelopmental processes, starting from cell division, differentiation, migration, and so forth. And this has consequences on brain structure and function, body's physiological feedback systems, and then brain developmental sequelae.
Wow, that's amazing.
So this mechanism is very well known from animal models, and there is one ex vivo human study applying this ex vivo to born placentas, and very, very low amounts of glutaric acid really inhibit this placental barrier function, and the placenta becomes very permeable to maternal cortisol.
And is that permeability exclusively to maternal cortisol, or could that actually cause permeability to anything that we don't want to get into the fetus's world?
No, it's very specific to cortisol. So we know the enzyme very well, and the enzyme is called 11-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase type 2, and this is very specific to maternal cortisol. And glycyrrhizin inhibits this enzyme working properly. And when this enzyme lacks this glucocorticoid barrier function and its function is inhibited, cortisol can enter much more in much higher levels to the unborn child's circulation and cause these harmful effects.
So what this tells me,
I was just going to say that this is very well known from experimental animal models, and those animals who have been exposed to maternal glycyrrhizin or carbenoxolone, which is the synthetic analog used in some of the experiments in animals, and there are even 11-beta-HSD2, which is the enzyme, knockout mice. So in all of these models, the offspring suffer from similar consequences that our human observational study has now shown. So these animals, when they grow older, they show deficits in memory and learning, and they show anxiety and depression-like behaviors. And these animals also have physiological consequences which relate to higher blood pressure, glucose metabolism, and also obesity.
So,
and what I didn't mention in relation to our observational study was that in addition to influencing child cognition, behavior, and puberty, the children who were exposed to glycyrrhizin during pregnancy, when the mother was pregnant, they were also 2.2 units heavier in relation to BMI.
Wow. This is, it's so much more than just the potential for ADHD or lower IQ. Are these effects transgenerational? Do we know that once these changes are imparted to the fetus and the fetus grows into an adult, even if that adult is not exposed to licorice during their pregnancy, do these changes stay generation to generation?
I'm not aware of human studies that have or would have demonstrated that overexposure to glucocorticoids would have generation-to-generation effects, but we can draw from other findings that this could indeed be true, because there are human studies on low birth weight, which is a crude proxy of environmental adversity occurring during pregnancy, and studies show that through generation, low birth weight babies deliver low birth weight babies, and those deliver low birth weight babies. So there is a reason to believe that some of these consequences would be transmitted from one generation to the other, and then to the next generation.
Wow, that's even scarier. Dr. Raikkonen, thank you so much for coming on the show and letting moms and future moms be more aware, I guess, because that's what we really need. Clinicians and lay people really need to be aware of this, don't they?
Yes, yes, I fully agree with you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Take care. That is astonishing. So you're eating a little piece of licorice while you're pregnant because you crave it, and little do you know that you're doing harm potentially to your baby. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about food timing and circadian rhythm, a favorite subject of mine. Stay tuned.
Quest Keto is making the ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Hey, this is Carl. I want to remind you of the importance of electrolytes. Because of all the workout supplements on the market today, I think electrolytes are the most important but the most overlooked. Check out the new Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme. It contains a broad spectrum of electrolytes plus a few extra minerals and vitamins. The lemon-lime flavor tastes great, and it comes in single-serving packets that make it easy for you to take on the go. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme banner ad today and save 10% off your purchase.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using Can-See eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit Can-See eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. Can-See eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse Can-See eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how Can-See eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high protein, low carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert, but this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. One of our favorite topics here is circadian rhythm. All of us blue blocker wearing individuals, people laugh at us. I'm sure that when we have guests over and I put my blue blockers on at 7 p.m., they think I'm a nut. They don't understand. That's okay. They'll get it. So we're going to talk about, there's a lot of things that feed into circadian rhythm. A lot of the signals we get that fine-tune circadian clocks have to do with our environment. It's not just about daylight when we get to sleep, but sometimes it's the what we call, I think they call it the locomotive period, when you're moving around a lot more and then you slow down. That sends signals. But also when you eat, part of the problem we see in today's society is we have people who sit up and watch television, blue light, and eat up until midnight. And then they lay in bed and they think, okay, I'm going to get to sleep now. And they say, oh, I sleep terrible and I have to have a lot of coffee in the morning. And they just don't get it. They're not paying attention at all. So what if, in fact, when you eat, the timing of your meals is as important, if not perhaps more important, than what you eat and how much you eat? My next guest is Dr. Peng Zhang. How you doing, Dr. Zhang?
Hey, how are you? Glad to be on the show.
Yeah, welcome. You are with the Center for Sleep and Circadian Biology, Department of Neurobiology, Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. Great university. And by the way, fantastic department. Very, very exciting to be working in this area when we look at diabetes, disease, and so on. So why this study? What questions still needed to be answered that this study had to be performed?
Well, so this article we're talking about is a literature review, which is actually a conference proceeding of the American Physiological Society President Symposium Series. I'm at the, as you said, I'm at the Center of, for Sleep and Circadian Biology. Our director, Dr. Fred Turek, was invited to speak at the symposium. And as a part of the symposium, we were asked to also to put out the talk as also a conference proceeding literature review in paper. So the goal of this article really is to, one, to increase the general awareness of the importance of the circadian system in metabolism and body weight regulation, obesity, diabetes, etc. And also to, secondly, to summarize what the scientific community have done so far, what are the strong evidences for this kind of argument, and what are the future directions we should to take in order to sort of push the exciting findings over the past decades into the medical community, into clinical practice, and eventually to improve the general health and the therapeutic outcomes.
Right, of a population that is actually living in the polar opposite of what tends to be healthy. It's interesting because I believe strongly that the research that you're doing and you're talking about today could alleviate literally hundreds of thousands of people of disease states that they're in today if doctors would have this discussion with them and say, hey, what time do you go to sleep and when do you stop eating and how do you eat throughout the day? And these discussions just don't arise. They don't even come into the windshield, if you will, of most physicians. And you know, we actually, as a society, applaud people who, you know, oh, he burns the candle at both ends. I remember, I don't know how old you are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's almost fashionable to squeeze your sleep time.
Yes.
Right, to be working all the time around the clock.
Yes, this was most evident to me in the 80s when the movie Wall Street came out, and the then Bud Fox, what's his name, Martin Sheen's son, Charlie Sheen, you know, was talking to Michael Douglas, and Michael Douglas is on his Motorola 8000 walking along the seashore saying, I've been up all night trading in China. And, you know, and bragging about he only sleeps a couple hours a day. And people were like, oh, if you want to be successful, you have to forego sleep. And then the slogans came out. Oh, there's plenty of time to sleep when you die. It's like, no. If you're not sleeping, you're going to die really soon, in fact, you know. It's like we think that sleep is an option.
Right. Or a luxury to.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the study. What papers were included in your review?
So, in our article, what we start with is to start from studies in animal models first, that to realize there's actually a link between the circadian clock and metabolic outcome. And then we go on with including more of like the mechanistic studies to look at different type of animal models, genetic models, or like environmental models of circadian disruptions, and just to look at their metabolic outcomes, as well as like genetic models for say diabetes or obesity, and to look at what if we restrict the animals feeding to a favorable time of the day, whether that would impact the outcome of those genetic induced obesity. And then we move on to try to translate those findings into humans by summarizing human studies that goes along the lines that also tells the important story that the meal timing of meals is just as important for the overall metabolic outcomes.
Okay, so when you started to dig into this information, did you start to see patterns that support what we all now believe, that, you know, when you eat and when you stop eating is playing a role?
Oh, yes. So, first of all, like I said, we started from the animal works. It's actually the work from our lab that we study laboratory mice. They're nocturnal animals, which means they're active mostly during the night and sleep mostly during the day. So it's the opposite as opposed to us. But if we restrict their food, so if they're only accessible to food during the dark phase, it actually will help them to protect against like high fat diet induced obesity.
Interesting. That's really interesting, because that's the model to supposedly use when they're trying to either work or disprove evidence that the high fat diet is harmful. So when you make them live the way they're supposed to live, because they're nocturnal, they're protected against the damaging effects, if you will, the obesity driven effects of the high fat diet.
Right. Well, I have to be like more kind of restrictive. It's not like high fat diet is not there, but it's going to be a little bit better than you're just eating it all the time, or even worse, like eating it at the wrong time of the day.
Are there any human papers that could be included in this review?
Oh, yeah. So one of the examples we mentioned in human studies is the study in Spain, where they were testing like some therapies for metabolic disorders. So basically, what they found is a study of like 400 some people in a 20-week weight loss treatment. So the timing of food intake actually affects the effectiveness of the treatment outcome. So people who eat lunch late will show a slower weight loss rate compared to those that actually eat much earlier. So the implication is, if you allocate the caloric intake towards earlier of the day, at least in this study setting, the weight loss treatment effects are better.
And isn't that well? Okay, so what I said at the intro that circadian rhythm is influenced by a variety of information. You know, it's checking, you know, for the presence of certain wavelengths of light that tell it that it's daytime or nighttime. It's checking for activity of the being in and of itself. I want to, do you call that the locomotive period or the, there was a name I remember reading many years ago.
Yeah. So the circadian clock is a endogenous timing system in all of our bodies, right? So if you, for example, if you look at humans, if you in a relatively constant condition, like in a controlled environment with dim light, constant dim light throughout, we still keep this kind of rhythm going for days and days. If you look at animals, for example, if you put the animals in constant darkness, these animals will just keep on running, still with this approximately 24 hours of rhythm.
Nocturnal animals, you're saying? Nocturnal animals.
Nocturnal or diurnal?
Really?
Diurnal. They all have this rhythmicity, and the terminology we use for their period is their free running period, which is very close to 24 hours. It's slightly different from 24 hours. Oftentimes, the slight difference is being corrected, so to speak, when you have a light-dark cycle. The light-dark cycle is the predominant synchronizer or time giver, if you will, to synchronize our circadian clock.
And food intake is another one of those things, because from an ancestral point of view, before we started farming and living indoors with artificial light, you know, we ate in the daytime hours because at night we wanted to be holed up and protected against predators that were after us. So that has been kind of ingrained into our circadian rhythm. So when we eat, indicates access, indicates daytime, and it all goes hand in hand, right?
Yes. So you're raising a very interesting point, because if we look at the molecular mechanism of the circadian clock, we found the clock machinery is actually it functioning in almost every cell in our body. We have this like a hierarchical model of the timing system where the clock in our brain is in a more leading role or a master clock, if you will. But the clocks in other organs, like in our gastrointestinal tract, in the liver, they're also functioning. So what happens if, say, a person eats a very late meal is that their timing signal perceived in the brain through our eye to look by the light, and the timing signals received by the meal actually conflict each other.
Right.
So you will have a internal dissynchrony, sort of speak, between your peripheral organs that are carrying out those metabolic functions, and your brain, which is signaling other kind of important physiological hormonal signals.
And I want to talk more about this. I want to take a break, and I want to talk about evidence of this that I learned about not too long ago, actually about a couple years ago, when I started wearing my Fitbit and tracking my sleep. And this really will hit home for those of you who think, oh, there's no harm in me having a meal before bed. Stay tuned.
Hey, Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Hey, this is Carl. I want to remind you of the importance of electrolytes. Because of all the workout supplements on the market today, I think electrolytes are the most important but the most overlooked. Check out the new Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme. It contains a broad spectrum of electrolytes plus a few extra minerals and vitamins. The lemon-lime flavor tastes great, and it comes in single-serving packets that make it easy for you to take on the go. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme banner ad today and save 10% off your purchase.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-616-0820. That's 800-616-0820. 800-616-0820.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Peng Jiang. We're talking about timing of meals and its effect on your biology and physiology. So I started wearing a Fitbit a couple years ago, Dr. Jiang, and I started tracking my sleep with it. It was very effective in helping me fix some problems that I was having with my sleep. One of the things I noticed early on was that when I got into some of my deepest stages of sleep, my heart rate would go down to the 40s, like 41, 42 beats per minute. I did some research and found out that this is actually very good. This type of heart rate variability is important. And this is actually required for appropriate recovery, let's say, because I'm a hard training type of an individual. I work out very hard. And I'm 59. I'll be 59 years old this year. So, you know, these things are all important. Did I just lose? I think I lost them. Hold on a second. Let's see something here. Bear with me. Yep, we lost them. Let me ring them back. Hold on. Because this is an important discussion. Here we go. I love live radio, don't you? Let's see. We have any problems getting him back on the phone here. I'll have to start this whole thing over. Okay, sit tight, sit tight. Sorry, how much of that did you hear? I don't want to repeat everything for the audience's sake.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get any of that.
Okay,
sorry.
Okay. So what I said was a couple of years ago I started wearing a Fitbit and I noticed that my heart rate dropped down to in the 40s, 41, 42 beats per minute in my deepest stages of sleep, and I learned that that's an important a factor for heart variability and health. And so then I noticed that on the nights that I ate a meal close to bedtime, my heart rate didn't go down, but instead went up in the middle of the night. So I did a little digging, and this phenomenon is actually called non-dipper. So when someone is a non-dipper, their risk of heart attack and stroke during the night while they're asleep is increased tenfold. They have a greater likelihood of having a heart attack in their sleep and or stroke in their sleep. So I did some more digging, and I discovered that when you eat a meal within 2 hours of going to bed, you will fall into the group of non-dippers. And the reason is that the body is working to digest food when it should be resting and doing the chores of metabolic debris cleanup, like autophagy, but also repair, using all of its resources for those things instead of digesting food. So having a meal before bed for someone who potentially has an underlying cardiovascular issue could be the end of them. So there you go, an example of how critical meal timing can be. Please comment.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, not just like heart rate. You notice the dipping of the heart rate. There's another dipping that is important for our health is the blood pressure. The blood pressure is also follows a circadian rhythm. It also goes down when during the night and when we are typically asleep. But if we are, say, having a big meal before we go to sleep, or if we are just basically delaying our bedtime, there's again, like I said before, there's gonna be a internal dyssynchrony. So the timing signals are actually contradicting to each other. Your hormonal rhythm or your physiological rhythm, like heart rate, blood pressure is disrupted because there's a metabolic signals that kind of tells your peripheral clock it's a different time. Along those lines, you might also notice that just at the end of last month, the American Heart Association also put out a scientific statement through their associated scientific journal Circulation, which also addressed on this issue of timing of meals. And their perspective is, of course, the timing of meals is associated with the risk of cardiovascular disease. They also kind of recommend to allocate more caloric intake towards like earlier times of the day.
You know, another interesting thing that we talked about quite a long time ago with Adele Musa, who writes the Subversity.com blog, was that daylight savings time is linked to an increase in heart attack. So,
are we like 10%?
Yes, that's very significant. People think, oh, only 10%. So, is it consistent? So, once you, I'm of the belief that if you eat a certain way, consistency is, the body likes consistency, it likes predictability. So if you eat, like for me, I have my last meal by 6 p.m., I'm in bed by 9. So is it the consistency incorporated into the meal timing?
Right.
Or is there some magic or danger in the transition and the shift phase as well?
Well, I don't know whether like if we call it a magic, but in general, when you have like if you're going through frequent shifting, synchronization is important. So there have been studies done in like frequent shift workers where we've seen this higher association they're associated with higher risk of a range of metabolic problems and also different kind of diseases, even including like cancer. For general population, if we're thinking, okay, I'm not a shift worker, what this kind of things can have implications for me. There actually has been a study. It's an online survey in Europe, followed thousands of people, asking people to log in their like activity record, like their bedtime. What they found is up to 70% of the population experience this thing called social jet lag. What it is that, say, during the weekdays, we have our like work schedules. We need to get up in 7 o'clock in the morning, get up to work. But during the weekends, we have another schedule. We have our social schedule, which we turn to sleep later, wake up later. So, up to like 70% of the population actually experience more than an hour of this weekly shift of at least an hour. That also has a huge implicates because the magnitude of the weekly shifts are also associated with the body mass index.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You know, so the reality is the best thing to do is if you get up at 5:30 on weekdays, you should get up at 5:30 on the weekends as well and get to sleep at the same times. Yeah.
As long as you're keeping sufficient sleep. You know, on the other aspects, we're talking about the timing of sleep. The sheer duration of the sleep is also important, which the two factors actually oftentimes goes hand in hand. For people who frequent shift work, lack of sleep is also a problem associated with this kind of thing.
And we've done the shows on the relationship between shift work and cancer, shift work and Alzheimer's disease. I mean, so, you know, we love to think that, oh, I'm doing all these other things right. I can stay up late. I can eat late because I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow. And you really cannot
mitigate the potential damning effects of ruining your own sleep. You may be able to do it here and there. And when you're young, you're robust because your body will adjust. But when you get older, when you start hitting 40, even in the late 30s, you find out that you just don't rebound from that kind of stuff as much. And people will continue to do it anyway. And, you know, I've jokingly said to people, you know, Johnny Carson started this whole diabetes epidemic because people would stay up late to watch The Late Show and then the evening news at 11 p.m. and get in bed at midnight. And they would snack the whole time they were up because the kids were asleep and this is my time and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Like you said, nighttime eating is also often associated with like high caloric intake. Oftentimes people stay late, tend to also have a lot of high caloric food with less nutrient values. That's even like doubly the bad influence on health outcomes.
So what can we say, and we're going to take another break here in a second. So let me pose this as a statement first and then ask you a question. Dr. Dale Bredesen has been on my show a couple times. He's a brilliant scientist over at UCLA. He did a 26-patient trial with people with some of the most advanced forms of Alzheimer's disease, completely reversing 24 of their symptoms and giving them their lives back. Now, this was not a drug. This was a multi-pronged lifestyle approach. But one of the things that it included was people had to have their last meal 3 hours before they went to bed, and they had to go to sleep at 9 p.m. And he claims that that was a very critical component of reversing some of the metabolic disorders that lead to and increase the progression of Alzheimer's disease. With that being said, does your research show us any indication of when a last meal should occur based on when sundown really occurs in our environment and when we should then be sleepy and get in bed? I have some theories, but I want to hear you.
So in general, our own research is in animal models, but when we are looking at the like human literatures, there are indeed a large body of literatures focusing on like the distribution of timing of meals and how that may impact a variety of diseases.
Let me do this. I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that. Okay. So let me say this. Okay. I believe strongly in some of the things that Dr. Bredesen has discovered. I believe that if we observe our local sundown, that normally, if we didn't live in a artificial lit environment, would start the pulse of melatonin, which generally within a couple to 3 hours of that pulse of melatonin, if you look at it the way the curve of melatonin that pulses when it's not intruded by artificial light and the curve and the amplitude, generally within 2 to 3 hours, you would end up wanting to go to sleep if given natural ability to do so. And so my theory is, in fact, that the 3 hour window, or maybe as little as 2.5 hour window between last meal and sleep, is something that needs to be observed. Is there any evidence in the literature that says, yeah, that's pretty good? Even if you're going to sleep at 10 o'clock, you still should have that 2.5 to 3 hour window of your last meal.
Well, yes. I think this is related to personal chronotype kind of thing. Some people may go to bed early, like consistently every day. That's their, you know, that's what the clock is telling them to do. Some people may consistently like going to bed late and wake up late every day. But the relative profile, if you will, like the hormonal profiles or the food intake time, are needs to be in kind of synchrony for each person to have a orchestrated type of overall metabolic physiological rhythmic program.
Okay, I want to take our next commercial break. When we come back, I want to ask you, what was the most astonishing thing that you learned from this particular review of the literature? Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today. Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Peng Jiang about the influence of when you eat and circadian rhythms. There's what was there anything that really jumped out at you after you reviewed this literature that made you feel like, wow, I didn't expect to see that?
Well, Actually, I think what surprises me the most is not what have been done, but more of what we haven't done to convince the public or to convince regulatory agencies to embrace all the exciting findings in animal models and in preclinical studies, human studies, to put forward the concept of circadian timing is a important aspect of health, a healthy lifestyle. I say this because you know, there seems to be a contradiction between how rich the scientific studies have been done in especially animal models from phenotypic wise to mechanistic wise, and to relatively small scale human studies, also to echo on what's been found in animal models. Versus there has been a lack of larger scale, like longitudinal studies following a large population of subjects, and to look at the long-term effect of meal timing in health, or following patients of a particular metabolic disorder or cardiovascular disease, and to look at how the circadian timing may play a role in the disease progression or the therapeutic effects. I think this has like two layers of issues. One is like the general the awareness of general general public. I actually will give you an example. Like one of our collaborators, Dr. Kasavajan in Rush Medical Center here in Chicago, he is an expert in gastrointestinal disorders. He told us a story where he has a patient who is a policeman. He came in to his office with a severe colitis symptoms. For a long time, he wouldn't be able to control the symptoms. Until one day, his wife came in, the wife of the patient, come in and told him, like, she noticed that the symptom seems to be on a rise when he took a night shift. Knowing the relationships are important roles of circadian clock, Dr. Kasavajan just recommended him to take off from the night shift.
Right.
And he did that. And the symptoms got well controlled for a couple of months.
Until he returned to night shift, right?
Yeah. Well, he has to write a letter to kind of release him from the night shift, right? But a couple of months later, even though like the symptoms are all controlled, everything goes seemingly well, the police officer come back in his office and said, can you write a letter for me to allow me to go back to the night shift? So it's kind of hit him as a surprise, but then he learned the factors behind this. It's one, there's a financial considerations,
right,
if you're taking the night shifts. And there's also a peer pressure, because even some of his friends his fellow police officers thought he wasn't like tough enough.
Right. And that's why when you were explaining, you know, you would like to see a stronger effort on the medical orthodoxy's position and even messages from government agencies that make policy to say, you know, look, eating at night is not a good thing. It leads to diseases, blah, blah, blah. But and I was going to say to you, there's only one problem with that, doctor. And when you said what, I was going to say FedEx. And what I meant by that was ad hominem. I'm not saying it's FedEx, but it's this phenomenon, right? See, I'm old enough to remember when TV stations went off the air at midnight. I'm old enough to remember the first bank to do 24-hour banking. It was called Citibank. The city never sleeps. Citibank was their slogan. And so we've become a 24-hour world. We have people who work second and third shifts. They yeah. raise families on you. And so you have two problems. Number one, those jobs are no longer good jobs because they make you sick. Number two, all those companies that have those second and third shifts that have had them for the past decade or two, and all those people who developed cancers and diseases and obesity and insulin resistance and all that sort of stuff, all of a sudden you open up a floodgate of potential liability. Oh my God, if the government starts saying, hey, staying up late at night is going to kill you, eating late at night is going to kill you, and then basically what you're saying is working that third shift at UPS is going to kill you, and people are going to go, wait a minute, I have cancer. I've worked at UPS for 30 years. I'm diabetic. I'm a UPS pilot. I fly all night long. Wait a minute. These companies are going to be held liable for these people developing diseases. It's not going to happen. Now, what you can do is educate people so in hopes that they make better decisions and be stewards for their own health. But hoping that agencies and policies and even doctors start telling their patients this, the first doctor that tells a patient, you got to quit UPS, that's why you got cancer, that doctor's going to get sued, he's going to lose his license, and that's the end of it, even though he told the truth.
Right. Well, I mean, you're exactly right. How to deal with the 24-hour society is a very complex issue. We're not saying we should give up all the social economical benefits of a modern industrial society, right? We're not advocating to go back to pre-industrial society, but we do want to improve the general public awareness of the adverse consequences associated with like shift work, jet lag, generally to respect your circadian clock more, right? To improve the more healthy lifestyle when you can.
Yeah, and that's going to take people making decisions. That's going to take people saying, I don't want the graveyard shift because it's not healthy. And once people start saying that, see, UPS can't sue every employee who says that, but they can sue an organization that says, hey, working that third shift throwing boxes at UPS is going to give you cancer and diabetes. That agency can get pounded into the dirt for saying that. But when people start whispering it to each other, you know, working this third shift is leading to diabetes. Oh, so-and-so got diabetes after he had this job for a couple years. Yeah. Oh, colorectal cancer, 5 times higher in shift workers. Oh, so-and-so got colorectal cancer last year. When people start whispering that amongst themselves, and then they go, I don't want to work the third shift anymore. When you start having people doing that, that's when industry will go, okay, we have a problem, and if we don't address it, we're just not going to have any workers at night. And those are the way to address that, in my humble opinion, is to cycle people who work the third shift on and off. Research has to be done, and we've actually talked about this in the past in some other shows, but research has to be done on the potential cyclical benefits of working a third shift every so often as opposed to continuously. The other thing that needs to be addressed is what are these people doing when they leave work? Companies need to become more involved in understanding that so that they can foster better, like, hey, you need to go home, get into a dark room, supplement with melatonin maybe or something like that, and make sure you get your 8 hours sleep if you're going to have this job. Companies are going to have to be the ones that carry that right. message. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, yeah, it needs to come both ways. Well, from people themselves as well as the organizations. But I think what you mentioned, like large scale studies, is exactly what's been lacking so far. Right now, we speak of findings from animal models. We speak of findings from relatively small-scale studies in humans. What is needed is larger-scale studies from even longer-term longitudinal studies that will tell us more conclusively or with more confidence what is the consequences of for example a certain type of work schedule, and also how you could mitigate those kind of effects.
Yes.
Either, like you said, through like melatonin supplement, or for example through like light treatment, or through things like try to allocate your meal timing to a more appropriate time of the day.
Yeah.
All those kind of things. What? Again, we're not trying to argue that we should get rid of the 24-hour industrial society, right?
No.
It's how we deal with it that moves things along.
Yeah, we can't get that genie back in the bottle. Well, last question I have for you is, there is a growing phenomenon using things like intermittent fasting. I hate to call it intermittent fasting. I like to call it a more ancestral meal frequency pattern, because as soon as you say anything that has to do with fasting or fasting mimicking, you ignite a left and right discussion about starvation and that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is a more ancestral meal frequency pattern that probably more emulates our circadian, our pre-programmed circadian, evolutionarily given circadian rhythm. You have any opinions on the role of intermittent fasting? Like, my role of intermittent fasting is 16 hours. 6 p.m. is my last meal. My next meal is post-workout after I've done training. It's right around 16 hours, which puts me in around 10 o'clock in the morning or so. Do you have any opinions on intermittent fasting and the circadian clock?
Yeah, I've noticed a few studies were working on like different schedules. The word intermittent fasting can actually cover a lot of different schedules, whether that's fasting once every other day, or a few hours, or the studies right now, I think it's similar to what we've seen in like timing of meals in humans. I think still we're kind of in the stage of only seeing relatively small size of studies, and I think a lot of efforts need to put into it to have a more confident conclusion.
Okay. So, and lastly, what do you hope both clinicians and lay people take away from your research?
Respect your clock.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. Don't be like Bud Fox and Gordon Gekko in Wall Street and think that sleep is a luxury and optional.
Yeah. I mean, if we think about along the evolutionary history, right, every single high organism we studied so far has a circadian system. Timing of the physiological metabolical processes are important. If we think about the millions of years evolution shaped this intricate system to tell time, it seems to me that it would be unwise to just to ignore it. And by the way, we are the only species that actually has that capacity to ignore it.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? We're the only species that has the ability to ignore everything. In fact, denial has been one of our evolutionary gifts. It's catapulted us to try things that we never thought we could do when we were able to do it. But now it's starting to backfire. Listen, Dr. Zhang, I hope you enjoyed the interview. This has been fascinating.
I'm very glad to be on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
Take care. Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Quest Keto is making the ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-0514 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-0514 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-0514. That's 1-800-516-0514. Again, 1-800-516-0514.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. I got a little tale to tell. Dr. Paul Constanti is a friend of mine. He trains at the gym I train at, and for the past couple of years, he's been telling me, you need to come in, let me look at you. And he's a chiropractor, but He has an integrated clinic that has a neurologist, an MD, and a couple really good chiropractors. And they deal with pain management type people, people who've been car accidents and stuff like that. And, you know, I told him about my numbness in my feet. And then when my numbness started going up my shins, he was like, you need to come in. You need to come in. And I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I have a good friend who's an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. William Seeds. I know other people. They're like, you know, don't let a chiropractor mess with your back. Don't let a chiropractor mess with your back. And I actually listened to them because I trust their judgment. They mean well. I know they mean well. That doesn't mean they're right. I just found out. So I went to Dr. Paul's office, really kind of with tongue in cheek. I was like, okay, let's see what they do. They did some x-rays of me. And the x-rays were there immediately. So it's not like as though they took my x-rays and hid them and put somebody else's up. And Paul looked at me and he said, man, he goes, you know, I know you like to lift heavy. And it's not that you can't lift heavy later on, but, you know, you're really doing yourself a great injustice. Now, I've seen x-rays of my spine before. My spine has gotten worse over the past few years. I jokingly said when he put the x-rays up, why are you showing me x-rays of a snake? At least I have a sense of humor about it, right? I've noticed lately when I take pictures, my left shoulder is lower than my right. Well, guess what? In the x-ray, it shows why. My thoracic spine has a curve to it, a side-to-side curve. My lumbar spine has a side-to-side curve to it. One hip is higher than the other. This is not like snake oil type stuff, right? So I saw that and I was like, God, you know, I'll be 59 this year. At this rate, I'm going to be in trouble when I turn 69. Like, I already have the numbness in my legs. He said, this is where the numbness is coming from. He shows me the lumbar spine. He says, L4, L5, look at that. The disc is almost gone. It's not completely gone. We should be able to decompress. I have a 23-degree curve in my lumbar spine. The lumbar spine is short, so it's very dramatic. I went for my first treatment yesterday. Again, you know, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'll give this a go. But I'm probably going to need surgery at some point in time, a laminectomy or something like that. So when he showed me my x-rays, he showed me the little bone that comes off the tail of the vertebrae and how it pushes down on the canal and causes a stenosis. And he said, this is probably where you're getting your numbness in your legs from. I also have excruciating pain in my feet all the time. And I live with it. I don't complain about it. Complaining isn't going to make it go away. I jokingly tell Elisa, if the average person had the pain in their feet that I have, they would be on disability and they would be on pain meds all the time. I find doing farmer's walks kind of squashes the foot out. Maybe I think what the farmer's walks do is it causes the pain to be so bad while I'm doing the farmer's walks with heavy weight that when I put the weights down, it feels better. I think it actually shifts my perspective of what the pain is, not so much makes the pain get less. So yesterday morning, I woke up and the pain in my feet and my glutes always hurt. And like the sides of my thighs, like the IT bands, was of a scale of 1 to 10. Yesterday morning when I woke up, it was at 11. I had a hard time walking in the morning. I get right on the treadmill and I walk for a while and it actually feels better. Things loosen up. But I just live with the pain. If I'm in the car and I jump out of the car, those first five or six steps, they're very, very cautious. They're, you know, I'm moving slowly, flexing my foot, and then I walk it out. I thought, you know, I could really use some kratom today, kratom, kratom, whatever you want to call it. But I am not going to take it because I'm going to see Dr. Paul today for my first adjustment. So he puts me on the table. He doesn't use that drop table. So there's none of this like violent dropping and that hurt me when I went to that guy up in Indiana who totally destroyed my neck. He caused the brachial plexus nerve to be pinched and I lost all feeling in my right arm. I can't even remember his name and it's good. Paul says, we're not going to do anything aggressive on you at all. He says, but we're just going to start you off real slow. He gave me an adjustment. First, he strapped my ankles in. He put a harness around my head, and he got behind me, and he pulled gently on my head like 3 or 4 times, and then he popped it. And every single vertebrae in my neck popped. I walked in there with tinnitus. My ears have been ringing a lot lately. They do on and off. He did that. The ringing in my ears went away. Like instantly. It was like, oh my God, I don't have the ringing in my ears. I was okay. I don't want to get excited yet. He proceeds to go ahead and give me the rest of the adjustment, which all I can say, I can't tell you what he did, but what he did was for about the next 10 minutes, real time, he folded me up like a pretzel. He leaned on me, vertebrae popped. He did this, hips popped, that popped. He popped my ankles. He got behind my knee and he popped my knee a little bit. So he has me sit up on the end of the bed. I mean, I'm moving around. He's saying, sit up, stand, roll on your side, roll on your side. The whole time he's contorting my body. He's twisting it. He's popping it and so on and so on. He says, okay, now keep in mind, he didn't say anything about the pain. He says, get up and walk around. Tell me how you feel. I stepped off the table and I don't swear a lot. I swear on my mother's soul in heaven. The pain was completely gone. I walked around and I kept thinking to myself, okay, is this a placebo? Is this like the farmer's walk where the pain has just gotten so bad for a while that now my new perspective has shifted and the pain that I was living with before isn't as bad? No. The pain in my feet was gone completely. The pain in my glutes were gone completely. The pain running down the side of my legs that I walked in there with was gone completely. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, everybody bashes chiropractic. And I'm sure there's people out there that are going to say, yeah, but did the pain come back? Well, the pain comes back after your painkillers wear off. Yes, the pain came back this morning. It was back to where it was. But all night last night, I had no pain in my legs or my feet. I walked around his clinic like a kid going, I can't believe this. I have no pain in my feet right now. Some woman said to me, if you can't believe that, listen to me. She said, I can get out of bed for the first time in decades with no pain. So I'm thinking to myself, when I talk to people whose opinions I respect, they tell me chiropractic is bunk. In fact, when I had Dr. John Parker on the show as the new resident rehab specialist, I got a well-meaning email from a physician who said, why would you choose a chiropractor to discuss rehab and pain management? And he went off and said, you know, basically the gist of the email was, these guys don't know anything. They're chiropractors. And I got to be honest with you. Deep down in the back of my mind, I've always felt that way. I've been like, yeah, chiropractors, you know, they're just like a really talented masseuse, but they can't really cure anything. Well, after my visit to Dr. Paul's office last night, I'm starting to think I was wrong. Now, Dr. Paul told me up front that this is going to take some time. We're going to have to do a lot of work the first few months. Most people hear that from the chiropractor. Oh, yeah, sure. This is where you bill me to heck. But wait a minute. It does make sense. If the problem is mechanical, you don't put braces on somebody's teeth for a day and go, okay, your teeth are straight. No, you have to wear the braces for months to redirect the bone, to redirect the ligaments, to make things change, to change the direction. I mean, sure, a laminectomy, you go in, they snip, snip, clip, clip. You come out, you go through some rehab, and it's like, oh, yeah. But now you're missing the ligaments that hold the vertebrae together. Like, that can't be too good. I understand if it's a last alternative and nothing else has worked, but that shouldn't be where I end up right now. And so I'm going to take everybody through this journey. I want to believe that Dr. Paul can actually correct, and he hasn't said, oh, we're going to have, he said, look, he says, at best, maybe we'll get a couple degrees out of your spine. He said, well, maybe get the pain where it's manageable. He never said to me, I'm going to cure you. I'm going to fix you, because I respect him. He's not going to promise me the world and not deliver. I think deep down inside, he feels like he can help me a lot more than what he let on. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to go 3 times a week for the first 2 months. Oh, then he put me on the lumbar spine stretcher, I want to call it. It was like a decompression machine. And it went from 20 pounds to 80 pounds, and it focused the stretch just on the lumbar region of my back. And then I went home last night and I hung in my inversion table. I hung again this morning. It's funny because when I hang in my inversion table, my pain markedly drops. But I only hang there for 5 minutes at a time, 3 to 5 minutes at a time. My nose gets stuffy, you know, and it's like uncomfortable. But sure enough, I hung in my inversion table last night. I hung again this morning. And the pain that is normally a 10 is probably an 8 this morning. So my fingers are crossed, and I'm hopeful that he can, in fact, straighten my spine out to a degree where we reduce some of the pressure on the nerves. I get some of the feeling back in my legs. The pain in my glutes and in my feet becomes much more manageable. That's all I'm looking for. But I got to tell you, I'm embarrassed to say it. I'm embarrassed because I have friends that are chiropractors. And I'm embarrassed to say that, you know, deep down inside, I've always thought you were, you know, little snake oil, like smarmy. But what happened last night on that table was undeniable. And if going frequently creates an environment where I stay like that longer and longer, then this is an amazing opportunity. And I will say this to all of you out there who lift heavy. If you lift heavy, you must go see a good chiropractor and get regular adjustments, because what has happened to my spine is not the result of old age. It's probably the result of several things. I know people who don't lift heavy and have stenosis and have compressions in their spine and have curvatures in their spine. The thing that we all share in common is what I'm doing right now. I am sitting in a frickin' chair, leaning forward, working a keyboard and a mouse, blah, blah, blah. So I think that these problems that we're seeing in spines today are really originating from the jobs of modernity. Okay? I think they're then compounded by us lifting heavy. Once the spine has a little tweak to it, and then you go in the gym and you squat heavy and deadlift heavy, it just solidifies that tweak. It kind of etches it into stone. Those muscles get used to having to make up for this shift in the hip, that shift in the spine. And then they become protective and they stay that way. They become like casts instead of muscles, which Dr. Paul says he wants me to start doing yoga, and I have to start doing just that. He said to me, I want you to do just as much stretching and relaxation of muscle work as you do lifting from now on. He says, I'm not telling you not to lift anymore. I know that you like to lift, and look, it's working for you. He says, but I want you to start doing as much yoga, stretching, fine things, rolling, foam rolling. I want you to do just as much of that as you do lifting. And I'm going to listen to him, because I don't want to be that 65-year-old guy who hobbles in and out of the car and says, I used to be strong. I want to stay where I am. And taking care of your spine is a mechanical thing. Waiting until it's so deteriorated and painful and compressed and destroyed that you go see an orthopedic surgeon, well, you know what? That happens, and that orthopedic surgeon can change your life at that point. But maintaining a healthy spine doesn't take surgery. It does not. It takes becoming aware of the things that we do, like sitting in this friggin' chair for hours at a time at this desk, leaning forward, working a key. I'm sure that's why my thoracic spine is crooked, because I reach out and click my mouse with my right hand all day, and I lean this way, and boom, I sleep on my left shoulder to keep from snoring. My left shoulder is lower now. All of these things we do day in and day out. Start paying attention to them. When Muhammad Ali, Ken Norton. Well, the story goes that I believe it was Muhammad Ali. When Muhammad Ali showed up at a training camp, he was carrying his suitcase in his right hand, and they were walking from wherever the bus station was to the training camp. And the guy who was training him said, switch hands. And he looked at him like, what? Take your suitcase and hold it with the other hand. Ali said, why? He said, because you're going to be stronger on one side than the other. He said, you need to start thinking about balance. See, we ignore this stuff. A blacksmith ends up with a huge right forearm because he swings that hammer all day long with that forearm. His left forearm isn't that big. We end up with what I like to call occupational hypertrophy. Muscles become out of balance because we do things a certain way every day for years. And then the spine pays for it. It adapts, it contorts, it changes shape. Pay attention to the things you do every single day. How you sleep. Do you sleep on your shoulder? Do you sit on your left cheek in the car all the time? Sit straight. And please, 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 if you lift heavy, see a chiropractor once in a while. Get x-rays of your spine and don't wait like I did. Don't be a jerk like me and wait until numbness in your legs goes, oh, yeah, you've done something wrong now. That's all I got for today. And I am going to be blogging about this and posting pictures of my spine. I am not doing this proudly. It scares the crap out of me. And you'll see why when you see my spine. And then you think to yourself, Carl, are you crazy? Your spine is like that and you're squatting and deadlifting and doing those kind of stupid things? Not anymore. Not anymore. All right. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, Casual Friday. Elisa Profumo will be on the air with me, my better half. And we'll see you then. Thank you for listening today.